Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 3rd, 2010, and this is the best, longest running, never missing a week in more than 5 years, certain to check raise you on the river, most satisfying PokerCast in the universe. I am Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, and I'm glad to hear that you must have got a good night's sleep there, because you were tired and cranky yesterday at the end of our trip, so you must have slept like a baby.
Oh, man, I tell you, I never get any sleep on these trips.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I have no problem sleeping, obviously.
I know, I don't know how you do it. I can't wait to talk about it later. It's remarkable.
Because, you know, I am a baby. You're just a cranky baby. I'm a sleepy baby.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm one of those babies that moms and dads love. And you're one of those babies that moms and dads really don't love.
Well, you know, I know one mom and dad will love this baby, so that's all that matters to me. That's all I need.
Jury's still around that. But hey, let's start the show with some poker talk here. And I have a pretty good discussion going on at anteupmagazine.com/forum, our official forum. It was started by one of our longtime listeners, Jay Herkey, and he posted a little thing about something that happened in a local, I believe it was a bar league tournament. And he was pretty insistent, Chris, that this jacknut that he was playing against was angle shooting. All right?
Yeah.
And so the discussion went on and on, but I had to jump in there, and you know, I said, as much as it pains me to side with the Deutsche Bank over an Ante-Up National, I didn't think what this particular guy did was angle shooting. I think he was just being a moron. And so, I mean, we're not going to waste the entire show talking about that whole specific issue. You can go to the forum at anteupmagazine.com forum and catch up. But I did think it might be an interesting topic to talk about. What where's the threshold between Deutsche Bankery and angle shooting?
Well, you know, I don't know if I've actually given that a lot of thought. I feel like if it's something that is unethical, it's an angle shoot. If it's something that's innocent, it's not. You know, if it's like if you're uneducated, ignorant toward the rules of the room or the rules of poker itself, and it's honest and it's not consistent, you know, the guy doesn't keep doing it, then I don't think he's an angle shooter. I mean, I really don't know how far you want to take this, but to me, it's, you know, if it's unethical, like, you know, checking out a turn to see what the guy will do and then doing it again and again and again, you know, it's angle shooting. But if it's an honest mistake, you just, you know, you grin and say, all right, just don't do it again, and then it's not. So I'm not really sure how far you want to take it.
Yeah, well, I guess related. I mean, I think you can be unethical and also uneducated.
Yeah, I guess.
Correct? I mean,
oh, yeah, as a person, yeah.
Right. I mean, I guess the dividing line for me, the more I think about it, is, and I think it's what you're saying, just in a different way, is if you know what you're doing and you know it's wrong, that to me is an angle shoot.
Exactly.
If you're if you don't know, I mean, you just maybe haven't played long enough to learn the rules or learn what it is, or you know, you just you're a couple fries short of a happy meal, whatever. That's not necessarily an angle shot, and I think that's what a lot of people jump on. They're like, you know, as soon as they see something like that, ah, jeez.
Yeah.
He's angle shooting. Well, no, he's just a moron. All right. So, you know, I guess I kind of think, you know, we're a longtime journalist. So we have to know the subtle differences between words. And, you know, one of them that we dealt with at the newspaper often is murder. You know, everybody's like, if somebody dies nefariously, everybody says, hey, so-and-so was murdered. Well, murder is like an actual charge.
Right.
That usually involves premeditation.
Right.
And if not, it's, you know, slain or some other kind of word that most people don't really understand the difference between.
Right.
So I think that's what I've decided. If it's premeditated, you are angle shooting.
Yes.
If it's not, you're just, you know, ooh, I'm having a poker. Woo, I'm going to check out a turn. Not an angle shot.
Right.
Just unfortunate or Deutsche Bankery.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. I love, don't you think our listeners love when I triumphantly put out something there and then I shoot a hole in my own theory?
Yeah, for the most part. That's
Yeah. So here's the problem with my theory that I'm still trying to reconcile in my mind. Let's say you're in the middle of a hand and you accidentally check out a turn. All right. You didn't mean to do it on purpose.
Right.
Right. Pure accident. Hey, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. All right, so then somebody bets, and then you're like, whoa, now somebody bets, I'm gonna raise.
Right.
So it wasn't premeditated going into the hand when you did the check out of turn, right?
Right.
But now you're kind of jumping on what your action that was inintentional has created something, and now we're taking advantage of it. Is that an angle shoot?
Well, see, that's exactly what happened to me in our home game. Remember that when I was leaning back and remember it was a long time ago. We had the big discussion on the show, and I apologized on the because everyone thought I was angle shooting and I wasn't. So it happened to me. I was thinking that the person on my left was going to bet, and so I was leaning back and I couldn't see that Faso had checked. I thought Faso had checked, so I checked when in fact he didn't check. So then he bet. And since there was money out there, I raised, and that's when everyone went, whoa, you checking that? And I totally didn't know he didn't check. I thought he did check, because I thought the guy on my left was going to bet, and then I was going to be able to check raise when it got to me. But then since he had bet, then I put in a bet. So it was totally innocent, and I wasn't angle shooting, because I couldn't see him. So in that case, it was just I didn't know he didn't check. Now, if you knew checking out a turn, cause there's no way to check out a turn and to induce that guy to bet. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird. I mean, unless he thinks, you know, he might bet because you're weak behind him, then yeah, then it's angle shooting and not innocence. But that happened in our home game. That was a while ago, but that happened in our home game to me. And the exact same scenario you described where I checked out a turn, not realizing that I had checked out a turn because I thought he had checked. Then he bet. And I was like, wow, there's money out there now. Now I can raise. I don't need to worry about the guy on my left. And I bet, I raise, and then everybody was like freaking out. So. I don't think it's an angle shoot if it's unintentional. Like you said, I just don't. You know, it worked in my favor, but I didn't mean for it to be that way.
So let me ask you this. If you do something that unintentional, right?
Right.
But you're aware of it, not your situation where you weren't aware of it, and then the action changed. Do you, by the basis of this conversation then, do you think there should be some kind of gentleman's agreement, even in your own mind, to not do something that may give the appearance of an angle shot, even though you're probably within your rights to do that action?
You know, I don't know, because ultimately you can't give someone else an edge because you want to be a gentleman either. You made an innocent mistake, but then you know that what you did could be looked at by your friends as an angle shoot. I don't know. I guess you could say to yourself, what's more important, the pot or your friends, you know, thought of you, but it's hard to say. I mean, especially, you know, there's a lot of money in there and you're getting together to win money and you made a mistake, but I mean, people make mistakes all the time when, you know, they deal the up card to somebody by accident, you know, and now they have to keep dealing around and I didn't mean to expose that card and now you've done it again twice today, now you're a bad dealer and you're unethical the way you deal. No, that's not it. It's just they're making mistakes. So I really don't know. I guess it depends on the situation and the pot size. And I mean, you're going to give up a hand because you didn't want anybody to think that you're angle shooting when you really weren't and you could explain your case? I don't know. I really don't know. I guess I'd have to be in the situation.
So here's the thing. I'm going to triumphantly declare that this is an issue that is full of shades of gray.
Yes.
And then I'm going to duck as grenades are lobbed at me by our many listeners who do not believe in the color gray.
You're going to definitively say that there's shades of gray.
Exactly.
Well, there
and
is.
And I'm going to stand behind that.
There is. There's always stuff like that. Unless there are hard, fast rules and you're talking about ethics, because really angle shooting is all ethics. So, you know, if it's unintentional, then I would see that you could probably go forward with the best action for your hand at that moment, because what you did was truly unintentional and, you know, in certain degrees too, people will have problems with. But I just, and like in my situation, I was like, I was thinking so hard about check raising the guy on my left that when I checked out a turn and he bet, and I was like, oh, well, now there's a bet I need. And I wasn't even thinking that what I did was angle shooting. I was thinking, now I need to react to what happened. And so I raised, and, you know, I got a lot of crap for it, but I still did it to win the pot.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of player. If you're playing for your living, and that's what you do for a living, and it turns out that way, you definitely have to win the pot, because, you know, you're taking food out of your kid's mouth, you know. So I'm not saying they need to be an angle shooter.
You
but
kids. You don't have kids. That doesn't matter. You know, you're taking food out of your belly.
That's just my way of saying you're playing for a living.
Do you think there's a lot of angle shooting in a doubles poker tournament, Chris?
You know, if there is, they get a penalty for it, just so you know. I've been watching that doubles poker, that Full Tilt Poker thing they've been doing on, that's like made for TV on GSN on Saturday nights. It's like 9 o'clock Eastern time, and it's pretty wild. They got these pairings where they're totally drawn random, and almost all of the players are from Full Tilt Poker, but there are a few handfuls that aren't. And you know, you're put together with these people randomly, and whether your styles mesh or not, whether your personalities mesh or not, and like the perfect example was the first week or the second week, they had Eric Lindgren paired with Phil Gordon, and these guys have had like problems with each other, like on Poker After Dark before. Lindgren called him an idiot and like wasn't joking, and so they've had their problems, and of course the total random generator puts them together, which was hilarious, but they actually went pretty deep and actually either won their match or came in second. I think they might have won. Anyway, it's weird. They get together, and they alternate actions. So let's say you and I are playing together, and I'm first. I bet when I get my cards pre-flop, and then the action goes all the way around, and then when the flop comes, the cards get passed to you, and I can't say anything to you from that point, and you can't say anything to me. Now you act on the flop. And then when all the action's done, you pass the cards back to me, I act on the turn, and then you act on the river. And that's how it goes for the entire tournament. And so,
wow.
You know, like, can you imagine me and you playing that thing? I mean, we're totally different styles. You have no idea what I'm thinking. I have no idea what you're thinking. You know, and you don't have time to get together and strategize, because it's like, okay, here are the names. Here's Scott. Here's Chris. Okay, you guys are a team. And then you sit down. And I think you're given, like, one or two timeouts, like, in between. And if you talk any strategy at all, you know, like, I don't, you know, like you say, I don't know if I, you know, no, that's it, penalty. You guys sit out for a round or whatever. So it's pretty weird. I mean, most of the time you don't get that, but I think Overstad got a penalty last week. It's been around for about 3 weeks now, and the one thing I'm still kind of confused about is the postseason. I guess the top 16 players make the postseason, but I'm not sure if how the teams are going to be set and if they're going to stay set or not. I think they would be, but I'm just not sure. But it was pretty cool. I mean, what do you think about that format?
Well, I think our good buddy Joe Navarro would have a blow a gasket trying to figure out the tells in the middle of a hand when the players are trading back and forth. You know, and I kind of like the two-person team tournament we did on our last Standing Up Poker Cruise better, you know, where you played an entire round and you swapped out.
Me too.
You know, I see the from the TV standpoint, it's obviously much better the way they're doing, because then you're getting that, oh my gosh, he doesn't know, he's got pocket aces, and now he's going to find out. And,
yeah.
And I imagine there is probably a lot of reading opponents' faces now, right? Because you got two opponents, so you can pick up twice as many tells.
Yep.
Depending on how you're looking at it. You know, I guess from a TV standpoint, it's probably enjoyable. From a playing standpoint, I don't know whether I like it.
Yeah, I don't think I like it playing, but I agree with you. I think, and it's funny you brought that up. I mean, it's like the obvious first thing you think of is like, I'm going to watch the person who doesn't have the cards and see what they react to, like what the other person's doing. Like, no, don't you understand? I set this up so I could float on the turn. Why are you betting here? You know, you can just see their face like react to a totally weird play and stuff. So that was kind of cool. You know, and I applaud GSN for bringing yet another poker show on when it looked like they're going to kill High Stakes Poker, and now they're bringing yet another one on. So,
right.
You know, that's kind of cool, too. And you know me and my poker. I'm on TV. I'm always watching it. So it was cool. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to try it. And I think it's slow. You have to make it a turbo because it takes so long to pass the cards back, have a timeout. And all. Yeah, so you'd have to make it quick blinds, which they do on TV. They actually, I think each episode has two sit and goes. So, you know, you watch like six guys play at once, and then you watch six players play the second hour, or whatever. So it's kind of cool, but, you know, I don't recommend it if you want to stay friends with people.
Well, you know, I tell you, it was a very friendly competition in our most recent Apes, Chris. I know you were busy getting your fingernails dirty, working on your car.
Yeah.
Do you have a little of that plumber's butt crack going on when you're out there?
Yeah, I guess I did. You know, but it was cool. I mean, I saved probably $500 just by working on my own car instead of doing what they wanted to do, and so I can't complain. And I'm sorry I missed Apes, but really I couldn't have won $500 playing Apes. So, you know, I had to fix the car first.
Yeah, well, you know, not the only one that missed Apes. I missed it too. Unfortunately, I was in the tournament. So it was a little different. I just was a non-factor, as usual.
Yeah.
And this final table, you know, the cream rises to the top, as they say.
Yep.
And final three in this Apes, Poker Geek MN, Hef Mike, Edward M. 111. Together, they have about 678 bananas. And probably 1,200 second place or third place finishes. And, man, what a rough final three. Poker Geek was the one that pulled it out, beating Hef Mike heads up. And I'll tell you, a lot of love being spread around between these three players afterwards. You know, a lot of respect for these folks' games.
You know, and really, if things hold true and nothing incredible happens, you know, Edward might be our player of the year, which means that we had Hef Mike Player of the Year, Poker Geek Player of the Year, and Edward M. Player of the Year. If he wins it, it's a top three. I mean, it really just is an incredible final table, and would have been exciting to see.
And of course, there was no limit hold'em, so you know any monkey can play no limit. So you know, let's not put crowns on these guys' heads quite yet. You know, it's like get carried away.
But Poker Geek, he sent in a clip for us to listen to sort of recap everything.
Hey, Chris and Scott, this is Poker Geek MN. And today I learned what it was like to run good. I managed to get a big chip stack early on. Then I put a bad beat on Glance to give me even more chips. And I got in a big pot with Columbo. I had pocket sixes versus his pocket jacks. Flop came 7-8-8. I thought it was a good flop for me. I put them all in. He called, of course. And I managed to river a six to send him home. In general, whenever I had the worst of it, I managed to suck out on everyone else. When I had the best of it, my hands held up. Things went really well. Then we got down to the final three. It was three banana winner Hef Mike, four banana winner Edward M., and myself. Despite some really tough play, I managed to get my third banana and win my entry into the championship free roll. Congratulations to everyone, and see you at the next Apes.
What a great final table to watch, and you know, that's kind of the other thing, I guess, is for folks that aren't quite ready to get into these tournaments for every reason. You know, there's some good poker being played at these final tables, so you know, you can obviously, if you have an account, you can click on and at least watch it.
Yeah,
and it's a lot of fun. So check those out, and your next opportunity will be this Wednesday, September 8th at 9 p.m. Another no limit hold'em event. Always on PokerStars. All the details, including the password, are at annieupmagazine.com/apes. I was bombarded in our room when we started the tournament. Hey, what's the password? And I'm like, really? Really? We're like at the end of August, and you don't know where to go find the password. Really? But I was a nice guy, so I put it in the chat room. And then one of the guys thanks, Scott, ended up cashing. So he definitely owes me a commission. And so bookmark annieupmagazine.com/apes. Bookmark it now. Push pause on the little iPod. Bookmark it. Good. All right, back. And of course, you know, one of the little cottage industries that we've developed here with Apes is ridiculing the free roll process. And, you know, while you and I were busy on the road here in Pennsylvania last week, a free roll that was scheduled for Wednesday did not happen. Boo. So, unfortunately, I apologize to all of our listeners who went there and looked for a free roll that did not exist. Contacted our great sponsors at Poker Spars, very apologetic, and offered to rerun, or not rerun, I guess, because I never ran right.
Right.
Reschedule the free roll. I asked them to reschedule it for this Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, also on Poker Stars. And to show you how much they appreciate the Antiup Nation, they're going to throw an extra 10 free seats in this free roll. So Tuesday night, the top 20 will win tickets for the actual Apes event, which will be the very next night.
Very cool. Very cool. And that's kind of cool, too, having it like back-to-back like that. You know, you win your seat tonight, tomorrow night, you play in it. You know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, so, you know, and hey, it's Tuesday. It's another night, so for those of you that can't play Wednesdays and Saturdays, now you get another night to play. Of course, you know, if you win a seat, then you're going
you
have to
play Wednesday.
Figure out how you're going to play Wednesday. But, you know, hey, you cross that bridge when you get to it.
Hey, if you want to win the seat and get blinded off at my table, that's fine. I got no problem with that.
And also in the process of all this, Stars went ahead and created all the rest of our Apes tournaments for the rest of the year. So they should all be on there. I'm going to try to double check and make sure everything's correct. But I do rely on our Antiup Nation to check them as well, too, and let me know if anything is incorrect. But all the rest of them should be on there, including the free rolls. And then one other special note that came out of this, too, when they set up the Heads Up free roll, they decided to give away 16 seats in the Heads Up free roll to the actual Heads Up event. So that's an extra 16 seats we got out of all this.
Yes, very cool.
So we appreciate PokerStars for making good on that. And I hope everybody turns out on Tuesday for the free roll and Wednesday for the next event.
You know, one of our favorite groups of listeners comes from Chicago. We got a lot of great guys out there, and we do a lot of stuff with them. You know, the Windy City Poker Championship. And, you know, Jason Finn is one of our good friends from there, and he helps run the Chicago Poker Club. And I think we've won their award. Haven't we won their award a couple times?
We have. We have in the past. Is this Indiana Jason or Minnesota Jason?
Is it Joyzy Jason?
I can never keep straight which state this guy's from.
But Chicago Jason, his site is back up and more powerful than ever, ChicagoPokerClub.net. It's a pretty cool site. I checked it out this morning again, too, just to look at it, and it's got the little skyline of Chicago, and it's got the Paulson chips for the logo, and it's got a lot of new stuff on there, breaking news, like the schedule for the Majestic Star series that's coming up, right?
I believe so, and, you know, he's working with a team of contributors there, so I'm sure he'd be happy to hear from folks that want to help him out. And, you know, the Chicago market's big now.
Yes.
Got a lot of rooms there in the northern Indiana, and then, of course, you know, all the charity games there, the main event charity games in Windy City are part of. So
right.
Check it out and let them know what you can do.
All right, well, we have our Antiup News Desk full of goodness. Let's hear what you got to say.
All right, the top 10 vote-getters for this year's Poker Hall of Fame have been announced, Chris.
Yes.
The list includes Chris Ferguson, Barry Greenstein, Jennifer Harmon, Dan Harrington, Phil Hivey, Linda Johnson, Tom McAvoy, Daniel Negreanu, Scotty Wynn, and Eric Seidel. Next up, the governing council will decide which of those names will be included on the official ballot, at which point all current Hall of Fame members and a media panel will decide the final inductees. And all that should happen in the next month or so, I believe.
I have three things to say. One.
Three things.
One, how are we not on that list? we've done a ton for poker in the last 5 years. Two, how am I not on the media panel?
Yeah, yeah.
I've begged them and pleaded with them. Hey, you know, I co-run a magazine. I co-host a show. I believe that I know a lot about poker history. Why am I not on this panel? And three, if Tom McAvoy doesn't get in, no one deserves to get in. That's all I can say.
Yeah, look at this list. There's obviously, I mean, all these people were probably qualified at some point to be in. I think some probably need a few more years, maybe.
Right.
But certainly there's a big push to get Tom in this year, and hopefully that works out.
Okay, the World Poker Tour and Fox Sports Net have announced a broadcast agreement for seasons 9, 10, and 11 that will guarantee airings of the poker tournament show in prime time on Sunday nights with additional rebroadcasts throughout the week.
A little more stability for the WPT. You know, it's kind of bounced around all over the dial.
Yeah.
They seem to have found a good home there at Fox Sports Net.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll be looking forward to seeing our Florida event on there now, too, so that's going to be real cool.
Absolutely. And finally, Chris, September has been designated as National Poker Month by the fundraising engine Poker Gives. Charity tournaments will be held throughout the United States and online, with buy-ins ranging from $20 to $225. All tournament winners will be entered in a drawing for prizes that include poker cruises, tournament seats, and a poker lesson from Mike Sexton, Linda Johnson, and Jan Fisher.
Huh. Pretty cool. It's nice to know that I was born in the poker month there.
Yeah. I think that was the initial thing when Mike Sexton, you know, he's like the head of Poker Gives. He's probably sitting around. He's like, what's a good month to do this? And I think Linda and Jan said, you know what? That Chris Cosenza guy, he is not on the media panel, nor is he nominated for the Hall of Fame. But maybe we just designate the entire month around him, and that will shut him up.
Absolutely.
I think that's what happened.
Absolutely. That's the only way I can get through the day. All right. Well, you know, we brought up Chicago before. We brought up our fans. And sure enough, on cue, Scott from Chicago calls the hotline, 813-448-1120. He wants to know if we have any stories about our wives and poker.
Hey, guys. Scott from Chicago here. I've been listening to you guys for pretty much since you started. Love the show. Keep up the great work. I had a question for you. I know you guys are both married, and I've heard occasionally on the PokerCast you're talking about you're bringing your wives to the table with you or playing along with you. I recently got married, and my wife isn't crazy about gambling. She really does enjoy, you know, just playing penny poker with me. I've taught her Texas Hold'em, and she really thinks it's fun, but she's scared. I don't know. She's seen Rounders, so she probably thinks I'm going to start, you know, hiding gangster rolls and paintings around our apartment. So I was just wondering if you could touch on maybe any stories about you guys and your wives and gambling and poker and, you know, how to include them and make them feel comfortable that it's, you know, you do for fun and by no means a professional. So anyway, just wondering what you think. Keep up the great work. Thanks, guys.
You know, I'm going to let you, because, you know, my wife is real understanding. She doesn't care how much poker I play. And I don't know if I have any stories about, you know, trying to convince her to play or convince me to. She wants me to play as much as possible. She wants me to get rich, which isn't going to happen.
So she should actually not want you to play at all.
Yeah, exactly. Save my money. But
that's her goal.
She hasn't seen that light yet. So I don't know. Do you have any? Well, you used to do the wife tax thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, our longtime listeners know quite well about the long family wife tax. You know, little thing I cooked up where I gave 10% of my winnings to my wife. Kind of a bribe of sorts to allow me to play. You know, hey, if I'm off playing poker and I win, then, you know, hey, she gets to go out and buy, you know, new CDs or shoes or whatever it is that she wants. And that went over well. And then, you know, when we started the company, she gave me a pass, as they would say in the mob. So I'm not tithing anymore to the wife on my winnings. But that's probably the big story, I think, in our relationship. You know, it's tough. Just like you said, you know, my wife has always been very supportive of poker. I mean, as long as it hasn't really impinged on our time together a lot. But I know there's other marriages out there that are different. And so it's kind of tough for me to suggest anything other than maybe the wife tax.
Well, you know, it's kind of
to bring those women into the fold.
In our situation, it's kind of hard for the wives to frown on it, since it's basically giving us a living and giving them free cruises and trips, and you know what I mean. I mean, it's tough for them to say, oh, you know, put, you know. And the other thing too is, you and I are pretty considerate of when we play. We try to only play when they're at work, you know what I mean, or whatever, when we're on a trip, so we're not away from home already. So. But I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to be on the phone when she's in the delivery room going, push, call, I call. That's not going to happen. So,
oh my God. Yeah, that's hilarious. Know. Well, tell him what he wins.
All right. Well, Scott, we appreciate you calling into the hotline, and, send us an email, and we will send you a free download of the Poker Ham Breakdown Pro a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games. That comes from element26.net. That's element numeral 26.net. So check that out if you want, and it'll help your game out a little bit.
Very cool.
All right, Chris, got a little brain teaser for the mailbag this week.
Okay.
A little different. I'm like, you know what? It's not really a question. I'm not going to put it as part of the mailbag. But you know what? Then I'm like, you know what? The mailbag doesn't have to be a question, right?
No.
Doesn't have to test our knowledge of poker or anything like that. It could be just something that's a little fun. So, Gary from, I want to say Alabama, but I believe it was Canada, actually. Gary from Alberta. Gary from somewhere that starts with an A and ends with an A. How's that?
That's pretty much every state in the union, I think, too. Isn't
it like A state? Right. It could be Arizona. It could be Albania. It's one of those. That's where Gary's from. He said, guys, here's a good one for you that I've never seen before in poker that might bend your brain. Little does he know that we have very tiny brains. So.
Yeah.
Can't bend. He says, he says he got it all in deep versus opponent on the flop, and he was drawing to only 1/10 of 1 out. So he wants to know, can you figure out a flop situation where a guy could realistically get it all in and be such a dog? And he goes on to say, short of fassoing someone, which he defines as flopping quads, the best situation I'd ever expect to be getting it all in is having an opponent drawing to 1 out in a set over set or set versus overpair situation. So after this particular hand, he looked at the equity calculation and found out the villain had a 0.2% equity on the flop versus 2% for a 1-outer. So he wants to know whether we know the answer to this.
I'm going to have to pass on this and let you try to guess. I knew the answer to this.
I knew the answer because I skipped down to the end of the email.
Oh, so. Okay. Well, then I just say it. I knew it because I think it was like, remember when Fasta did that, who's the best Anti-Up host quiz of us and all that?
Yes, that's right.
I think I was actually like looking at stuff, poker trivia or something. I remember some guy talking about this as a 1/10 out or something of that nature. And I know what the situation is, so I'm not going to say what it is, but I'm sure the people listening want to know. So,
all right. Well, we probably yammered on long enough that people could probably think about it at home and try to figure it out. But here's the situation. The hero had queen-queen. The villain had 7-6, and the flop was queen-7-6 rainbow. So our opponent had no backdoor straight or flush draw. Any 6 or 7 will give him the lower full house, and he loses. So the only hope he had was backdooring, running 6s or running 7s.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty sick. Yeah,
99.8 to 0.2% advantage. And he said, by the way, there's very few things in poker better than having 500 in the middle with that advantage.
Well, it would have been really sick if it happened. Running 7s. That would have been, oh my God, imagine that.
That would probably be the most amazing thing ever at that point.
There was a hand back in the World Poker Tour at Foxwoods when Hoyt Corkins had come back out of retirement and won the title over Hellmuth and a few other players. But there was a hand with Hellmuth where the only way Corkins could win is if he got running 7s. And it happened, and he won the hand. And they put a statistic up, like it was like 735-1 for that to happen, or some huge number. I don't know what it was, but that did happen. It was running 7s, the only way he could win the hand, and he did happen that way. It was pretty funny. It wasn't this exact situation, but it was a situation where you need to get running 7s to win, and it worked out that way. Pretty sick odds there. That's incredible.
All right, so Gary from Parts Unknown, I don't really think you deserve anything because, I mean, jeez. You obviously won a huge pot that you had like almost zero chance of winning. But, you know, we're charitable here, so we are going to send you a deck of those beautiful J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Anti-Up.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of the speeding car. Okay, we are in the final pre-bubble stages of an online no-limit hold'em multi-table tournament. As you are probably already aware, this is the chip accumulation phase of the tournament. If you sit around and wait for hands pre-bubble, the ante sneak up on you and nibble away at your stack while your opponent's stacks are growing. We've experienced a bit of this ourselves and are just under 8K in chips, while the average is 10.5. There are 552 left in a starting field of 1,300, and we are currently in 310th place, which will pay 189. This is the 200-450 level, and we are posting the big blind of 400.
Something is different about this case, but I'll get to the bottom of it.
Under the gun folds. Under the gun plus one, who is the monster stack at the table, folds. EP folds. Mid position raises it to 1,200. He has an 11K stack. Suddenly, the hijack goes into the tank. He has about 6K, and he shoves it all in. The cutoff folds, the button folds, the small blind folds, and I look down at 10 of clubs, 10 of spades.
Sometimes you need to catch a break to crack a case.
So, are you ready to give this up?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
2 weeks in a row we've been on the road.
Yes.
Last week, Louisiana. This week, Delaware, Eastern Pennsylvania. And it is amazing to me that we survived sharing a car for 600 miles in 10 hours, times 2. So that's like 1,200 miles, 20 hours in the car over the last 2 weeks together. And we survived. And I got to tell you, as much as I enjoyed the Louisiana trip last week, I also enjoyed this week, Delaware, Eastern Pennsylvania. Yeah. Very, very good opportunities to play poker up there. Very nice rooms. And came away very impressed.
Yeah, and I was mostly impressed that we didn't kill each other, to be honest with you. And again, you know, it's like, no radio? All right, whatever. So, but, you know, and it's odd to see so many new rooms like that. You know, I mean, it's always a special treat when you get to go, oh, there's a new room opening, let's go see it. This is like every room was new. And you know, I mean, some of the felts were already worn out, and some of the Bravo systems had been swapped in and out or whatever, but for the most part, I mean, everything was shiny, spanking new, and everyone still had energy, and it was just there was just no nicks on the walls. No, I mean, everything was just spanking new, and I felt spoiled.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in addition to just like going to one room and seeing it, as you mentioned, I mean, when we do these other road trips, obviously these are rooms that have been there for a while too. So, I mean, this is really kind of uncharted territory to go and see this many brand new rooms. But you know, it's an exciting time for players in that area, I think. You know, obviously a lot of pent-up demand for poker, and these rooms have been swamped, just literally swamped with players. And you know, the other interesting thing, too, is that it's probably perhaps not too exciting for fans of Atlantic City or rooms over there. You know, almost every employee we talked to had come from the Atlantic City market. So there's probably, you know, kind of a loss of little brain power coming over from that market. And certainly, you know, players that before were, that was their only option, is driving all the way over to AC, now don't have to drive as far. So
It could be the nail in the coffin. You know what I mean? Atlantic City is going to have to really, if they're going to keep poker, they're going to have to really rethink. I mean, the Borgata will be all right just because of who it is and what it is and what they offer. And I think that, you know, maybe the Trump, Taj Mahal, whatever, will be all right. But really, if other rooms are going to want to offer poker, they may have to kick it up a notch or just give up, because, you know, it's only going to get worse, you know. And these people are happy. These rooms, they're doing it right in these rooms. And, you know, their main market was these places. And these people aren't going to make the 2.5-hour drive anymore. They don't have to. And their business is going to really suffer in Atlantic City.
Yeah, and one of the more amazing things that I think we encountered on this trip is that these rooms are brand new, right?
Yeah.
But probably half of them almost are already talking about expanding their poker rooms. Oh, just open them, like in the last month or two, and already the demand is just crazy strong there, and you know, at least a couple of them we talked to are already in the middle of expansion plans, and a couple other ones said, you know, yeah, it's getting to the point that we're going to need to try to find a bigger room or add tables or something like that. I guess when you're trying to open a room, you're trying to do the best you can and estimate demand where you really can't figure it out, and it sounds like everybody kind of misestimated.
Well, the other thing too is that they knew they weren't going to get tournaments right away. And so most of the ones that talked about expansion, or at least a few of them, are expanding for tournament rooms so that their cash game rooms won't be affected and they will have a separate tournament facility, Delaware Park and Mohegan Sun, Pocono. So that those rooms, you know, that's what they were doing. But other rooms were like, holy cow, yeah, we need more room. Let's go to the conference center or something. And that's fine. I mean, I'm sure they just wanted to get a room together, and the players are happy they got a room. And now that they're expanding, it's just going to be that much more successful. So, but yeah, it is kind of weird. No tournaments. It's like, how does the state say, okay, you can play cash games, but tournaments? Oh my God, that's just, you know, how do you not? You know, that's just too taboo. How do you do that?
Yeah, well, you know, we obviously can kind of understand it because of the crazy lawmaking going on here in Florida over the last couple of years. So.
Right.
We have a little special place in our heart for our folks up in Delaware and Pennsylvania that are trying to get the regulators to try to not be so head stuck in the sand, I guess, as it is. But it sounds like tournaments are coming probably, within the next month or so, they're going to start popping up in most of the rooms.
Yeah, some of them they said were starting September 8th, so that's basically next week. But the rest of them, between now and November, they're going to pretty much spread tournaments.
And then very few promotions up there, too. I mean, a couple of the rooms had bad beats. Obviously, some of it is still state approval thing. But the rest of it is just the rooms just so busy.
Yeah, they don't need to bring anybody in. It's gonna be interesting when it settles down and they really find out how many people are going to show up all the time and the dead money's gone. That's it, to start getting people in, what they'll do. And I know they're going to use our magazine to figure it out because, you know, they're all talking about, you know, it's great to see what's going on all around the country in our magazine. So, you know, they're looking at the promotions on our Where to Play pages and going to use those ideas. So that's good. You know, I'm glad that we can contribute that way as well.
And there was another trend on the felt that you were particularly interested in.
Yeah. They had pretty much every room had automatic shufflers. I don't know if they all did. I don't think they all did, but pretty much everyone did. And the majority of them have the angled shufflers, which I've never seen before. It's like a 45-degree angle on the left so that it's out of the way, and it's, like, ergonomically better for the dealer to grab, like, with his right hand or whatever and pull him out. And it stays out of the way. It stays out of the pot. It stays out of the muck. And, it was cool. It was to the left and then angled, like, 45 degrees. And I thought that was really smart.
Yeah, that's really always my big problem with the automatic shufflers, which I'm usually a fan of because you get more hands dealt and things like that, but I just hate that the chips are, like, you know, stacked on it, and they just seem like they're out of place where they normally are. So, you know, obviously we didn't play long enough to see whether these still interrupted the game anywhere, but I don't think so. I think it's probably less.
Yeah, no, I mean, from the little that we watched, you know, it seemed like it was real efficient, and I never really saw chips on them or cards on them, so. You know, it just makes the game run that much more smooth, and it's a real smart move, and I suggest it to anybody doing it. It was smart. You know what was funny about this trip? You know, we went to Louisiana, and everything was 4-8 limit, and if they played no limit, it was 2-5.
Right.
Now you go to New England in Pennsylvania or whatever, and it's like 1-2 no limit is everywhere, and 2-5-2, and occasionally you'll see a limit game like 3-6, but you know, it was almost all 1-2 no limit. They all said it. That was their dominant game. And it was just like, wow, it's just amazing from area to area how things change.
Yeah, and, you know, it was also – it shouldn't be a big surprise, I guess, because, you know, Atlantic City is still probably one of the few places you can see a stud game get going.
Yeah.
But occasionally, talking to room managers, they mentioned, you know, hey, we get the stud game going every once in a while. Maybe get an Omaha game going. And some rooms are, like, dealing crazy pineapple and mixed games. So.
Yes. Yes.
It was nice to see that there's actually a market that's brand new and is not completely overrun by the no-limit cash games, that there still is room for some other creativity and cash game offerings. So.
And just like any poker room, they'll all deal whatever you want. It's just that's what's in demand, you know?
Right.
But I think it was Mohegan Sun that said that they have like a, was it a 15-30 hose game? That was awesome. Every night or whatever. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and sometimes they throw a deuce of seven triple draw in there, too.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So yeah, so that's good to hear that there is a variety of games to be played in these brand new rooms. And hey, so should we run through these rooms we went and mention a couple cool things about each?
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you what, I recommend every room. There wasn't one room that I wouldn't recommend.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Know,
absolutely.
They're all good rooms. So
all brand new and all had something to offer. I mean, they're all just a little bit different. But we started the trip out at Harris Chester, which is just a mere minutes from the Philadelphia airport. So.
Right.
You know, if you're ever on a long layover, that's where you're going to go. Or if you're banging on the pilot's door, hey, land the plane, I need to play some poker. Harris Chester is where you're going to be in Pennsylvania. And the thing I liked about this room, Chris, was that they had these like floor to ceiling windows.
Yeah.
At the edge of it, and not that it like overlooked like a beautiful bubbling brook or something like that, but at least it overlooked like landscaping and stuff. I like light in my poker room. I don't like to feel like I'm in a cave, generally, and I thought that was pretty cool there.
Yeah, I totally agree. Whenever a room is bright like that, it makes me want to play more. You know, I know that most casino thinking is don't let them know what time of day it is, put bright rugs on the ground, and drab ceilings and keep them in the room as long as possible. But when you're playing poker, it's not the same mindset. And I want to be, you know, and if at night it looks different, you know, I'm sure it's obviously it's dark and everything and the lights, whatever. But for the daytime, which is when I mostly play poker, I enjoy it being bright like that. So yeah, I did enjoy those huge windows.
And then from there, we drove down to Delaware Park in Delaware near Wilmington, I believe.
Yeah.
And, man, this is a very elegant room. I mean, they're all brand new. This one kind of took it to, like, that elegant level.
Yeah.
Leather chairs at the table.
Yep. Yep.
Which is kind of a rare. And I know you love these oversized, hand-carved chairs that you can wait on. You know, when you get there, particularly in these areas where the wait lists are long and you need to wait for a table, it's always nice to have a comfortable place to sit down. And man,
they were huge, and like the handles, like on the armrests, were like oak carved like griffin heads or something. Yeah. I don't know, they were dragon heads or something, but they were really cool, like animal like heads with their tongues sticking out, and it was all black leather and cherry wood, and I don't know, it was just. It was really pretty cool. And, you know, and it was the only poker room that we visited on this trip that had the marble racetrack around
it. Oh, yeah, right, exactly, on the tables. Yeah.
You know, the poker room manager there, Anthony Chester, he said that, you know, it's the drink rail. But I like to think of it as a chip rail. I mean, I think everybody stacks their chips there and likes to pull them off there. And it's just more stability on the chips so they won't fall over. And he came from the Venetian, right? So he's trying to, like, enlist a Venetian-style room with the way it looks, the way it runs, the way the tournaments are going to be. I mean, I think that's his goal.
Yeah, I think that's what most of our listeners are going to really appreciate about Delaware Park eventually is that if you've gone out to the Venetian, and that's just a world-class room out in Vegas, and obviously their deep stack classic tournaments are very successful. I think you're going to see it's going to be kind of like Venetian East.
Yes.
When he's completely done with this. And they're getting ready to open a huge tournament room that you got a little tour of. I was busy talking to some other folks, but a lot of capacity being added there.
Yeah, it was like a 25-table room, and they're going to add a bunch of flat-screen TVs, and there was a dedicated bar in the tournament room, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah,
I would assume that bar will also service, you know, the poker room or whatever, the other regular cash game room or whatever. But, yeah, a huge dedicated bar and then a bunch of tables. And, you know, it was a little – it was like maybe 70 yards away from the poker room itself, which can be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. But, really, they really know what they're doing there. So I would imagine it's going to be a good thing for them.
From there, then we headed south down to Dover and Dover Downs. And I tell you, I didn't laugh as hard talking to anybody as we did. We're talking to Frank, was it Fody? Is what
Frank,
we decided it was?
Yeah, it's Frank Fody at Dover Downs. He's their poker room manager. And man, he was hilarious.
Quite a character. He's going to add a lot of personality to that room. And not that it needs a lot more personality because it is a room sponsored by Crown Royal. I haven't seen this before.
Yeah.
For the most part, but I mean, it's named the Crown Royal Room, and there are a lot of touches from that liquor company. You get discounts on the beverage,
right.
which is probably the most important thing. Special events, they have the Crown Royal girls show up from time to time, and as soon as we walk in, we see this huge throne.
Yeah, it's a purple and black throne. It's huge,
right by the entrance, and I knew at that point that you were going to try to talk Frank into having his picture taken on it. And it did take some talking into it. This is not a guy that I think you need to talk into a lot of stuff. But you worked your charm, and we got some good shots of him in that huge throne.
I tell you, too, you know, the cool thing was, too, is the NASCAR track, because it's Dover Downs. It's right outside the room. I mean, these guys, when they're going to be there, when they're going to be racing their cars there and testing and during the race, oh, man, it's going to be loud in that poker room. That's going to be pretty wild hearing those cars go by.
It's going to be great. Yeah, because we're pulling up, you're like, do they race cars here? And I thought you said carts.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's harness racing. All right. And you're like, okay, whatever. And then we get in and they take us out and you're like, I told you!
Because it was so massive. It had to be the Dover Downs for the car racing. I didn't know if it was the same, you know, company. Because when I worked in sports all those years. The Dateline always came in Dover and it was the Dover Downs and everything and the Pocono race and all that stuff, all the races in that area. So I just, at first I didn't put it together. I'm like, look at the size of this stadium. And this has got to be where NASCAR is. And we get in there. And you know, the funny thing too is the harness racing happens inside the NASCAR track.
Yeah, it's a track within the track.
Yeah.
It's really wild. I thought, you know, if I ever get rich enough to buy this place, I'm going to run both the cars and the horses at the same time.
Yeah, good luck with those horses.
I'm going to pack it in, man. There's not going to be an empty seat in that place.
The Monster Mile. Yeah, it's pretty cool. They call it the Monster Mile there. And, you know, so we get there, and we're like, all right, let's go to the buffet. And, you know, because we saw the room, and we're starving. So, you know, we sit down with some food, we get ready to have our food, and the waiter comes over, and he's like, what would you like to drink? And you said, can I have, like, a Sprite or Sierra Mist or whatever? And he's like, yeah, we got that. So I said, well, what kind of products do you have? And he said, well, I have Pepsi products. I said, okay, I'll have a Mountain Dew. We don't have a Mountain Dew. I said, what do you mean you don't have Mountain Dew? You said you had Pepsi products. He's like, yeah, but we don't have Mountain Dew. And I said, it's at the beverage station downstairs. How do you not have Mountain Dew? So we're going back and forth on. Now, I don't know who this guy is yet or anything, right? I'm just like, all right, whatever. Just give me a Pepsi, you know. And I even though I didn't want that, you know, but I was just like, I wanted to eat, you know, so I wanted my drink. So I go and get the food, and then I come back, and then the guy comes back. And I'm like, uh-oh. And he's going to yell at me or something. I don't know. So he says, and he has an accent. I can't place the accent yet. He says, you own Poker Magazine? And I said, he says, you work for Poker Magazine? I said, yeah. I said, my partner Scott over there and I, we run the magazine. We own it. And he says, oh, he says, listen, I'm from Morocco. Have you ever heard of Morocco? I'm like, yeah, I've heard of Morocco, man. And he's like, he used to be a pit boss over there, like in their casinos. And he was telling me about, like, European poker magazines and all this other stuff. And he's like, I really want to, you know, work here in the pits, you know, I want to work in the poker room here if I can, but my English needs to get better. And I have to say, I have to agree. Your English does have to get better because I didn't understand a word you said. I pretty much made up that whole story right there. I mean, that was essentially what he said, but he did work as some sort of pit boss over there or something. He ran poker tournaments too. And he wouldn't even give me Mountain Dew. And here I am thinking this guy's going to kick my butt now. I'm like, if he was a real server, he would have went downstairs and got the Mountain Dew from the thing and brought it back up to me, you know?
Right. It's all about Chris, isn't it?
It's all about me. I can't believe, though, Pepsi products and they don't have Mountain Dew. What do you mean you don't have it? It's like that big Greek wedding movie and the lady's like, what do you mean you don't eat no meat? He's a vegetarian. Oh, okay, I'll serve lamb, she says. Same thing here, man. Anyway, but it was great. Dover Downs, we had a lot of fun. You know, and you're right, that Crown Royal logo is all over the room. It's on the felts. It's very prominent, the Crown Royal Poker Room, and I'm happy for them. I'm glad they're kicking it off. And I tell you, when the NASCAR race is there, that place is going to be packed.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. From there, we headed south down to Harrington at Harrington Raceway, and the actual manager wasn't there, but what we understand from talking to him before we got there is he's got a lot of ideas in the back of his mind, so it's gonna breathe some new energy into the room here pretty soon. But a couple things that I noticed, you know, a lot of rooms have tableside dining now, right? There they have, like, you know, a full menu from the restaurant. You know, we can get like crab cake entrees to eat at the table.
Right.
So you know, it's not just your normal foods that you might get. So that was pretty cool, and. And of course, when we got there, we you know, we let the GPS kind of guide us, which is never a good idea. And we ended up like in a field on the other side of the casino. We walked through the stables and stuff. We're like, this can't be right. But of course, it wasn't right. But we got there. So when you go, be sure you go the right way. Don't go the way we did.
I have plenty to say about the GPS lady later. Oh my God. She was just horrible. But the place was cool. I mean, you know, and they're always the same situation where they're trying to see what the clientele is going to settle into before they make their idea, their changes and bring forth their ideas and stuff. You know, they don't have tournaments yet either. They're coming soon. And they just bumped up their Bad Beat jackpot too, I think, like 50 grand that night. So, yeah, they have a Bad Beat, and I'm sure that once they settle in, they'll start bringing in some stuff. Because they got a lot of experience in their poker room guys. A lot of the guys have been around for a long time, so that should be a good situation there.
And then, you know, we get to spend the night in Baltimore, and then we got up early the next morning and headed back into Pennsylvania, up near Harrisburg to Hollywood Penn National. And, you know, it's another room that just very elegant. When we walked in, and you get to talk to the manager a little bit more there than I did. I was talking to some other folks, but already talking expansion there too.
Yeah, and they were the ones I first noticed the angled shufflers too. I was like, oh my god, it's elegant too. I mean, the room is full of like golds and
a lot of golds,
browns, and it was just a very nice room. And they had an interesting thing: the brush was also your cashier.
Excellent. I didn't know that.
All the chips, everything. There's nowhere else to go. You did it right there. You got your assignment, you put your name in, whatever, and then you got your chips there as well. So it was all one handy little it's like one side you got your chips, the other side you put yourself down for a table, but it was this little central thing right at the entrance, so you know, there's no mistaking what you need to do when you got there. So it was pretty nice, and it was such a whirlwind tour. You know, I would have liked to have spent more time in each of these, but it just didn't fit in our schedule, and I would have liked to have played there. They had a game going that I wanted to play in real bad, but couldn't do it. You know what that means.
yeah. So of course we had to get back on the road, and our next stop was Mohegan Sun Pocono. And, you know, it's up in the Poconos, but the same kind of Mohegan Sun kind of flavor there. And the first thing I noticed when I walked in before we even got to the poker room is just the retail opportunities there. I mean, they have a lot of chain restaurants.
Yes.
All the way from, like, you know, Johnny Rockets, that kind of stuff, and Ben Jerry's, all the way up to, like, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and those kind of things. And a Brookstone store. Brookstone, I walk in, I'm like, oh, my gosh, Brookstone, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Definitely go up there and wait for my table. At, you know, and they got the little Bravo system there where they can text you when your table's ready or when your seat's ready in the poker room. So I know I'd be up in the Brookstone chair. You know, store in the chair, you know, like, you know, and vibrating away. And, oh, time for my room, my seat. All right, cool. That's exactly what I'd be doing. But but another very unique room. I mean, they put a lot of pride in spacing out the tables so you're not crammed in there.
Yeah.
And somehow they worked in some, like, stone on the wall and stuff, too. So it was like down on the I don't know if it's really the basement, is that right to say, but lower level.
It was definitely the bowels of Mohegan Sun. It was as far down as you could go to get to it. And it was weird. It depends on where you park. See, we don't know where we're parking when we get there, so we end up walking like 6 miles, and there might be a dedicated entrance right there, which I think there is by the escalators, that you could have parked on that side of the building. But if you park on the wrong side of the building, you know, you're going to be in for a walk, so make sure you call ahead and find out where to park. You know, one thing that was interesting about the room, too, is they did have dedicated areas within the poker room for limit, 1-2, and then, like, games that weren't high limit and weren't 1-2 kind of thing. So it's kind of divided into three sections, kind of like our cruise will be.
Absolutely.
And I think once they get, like, sit-and-goes and tournaments going, they're going to have, obviously, they talked about expanding as well, and they showed us the tournament area that they were going to expand to once they get it approved. But I think they might have, like, a sit-and-go area, a low-limit area, and then a high-limit area. So there's always something. And they just added two more tables, too. So it was really nice, well-run. Art Blanda runs it there. He actually helped start the Mohegan Sun Room in Connecticut. So, you know, they know what they're doing there. It's not like these people are all break-ins. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, very good. And then we continue on in the Poconos, drove over to Mount Airy. And I tell you, the first time we drove on the property, made me remember Dirty Dancing.
You know, I thought the same thing. I thought exactly of, you know, the, what do they call them, the Berkshires or the, you know, that's what I was thinking of. I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be a gym game going on in here.
An absolutely wonderful place to probably vacation. I was expecting Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze to jump out, and that would have really freaked me out.
Especially because one of them's dead.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other one's career is dead, so that would have really shocked me.
Hey, she's going to be Dancing with the Stars this time.
Yeah, I can't wait.
She's being renamed Dancing with whoever we could find. But, you know, just a great area. I mean, a nice little I guess your definition of nice, but it was a very interesting drive in there through a lot of curvy roads and trees, and definitely a place you could go for a weekend and just relax. And they get like I think they said about half and half of their players, half are tourists and half are locals there. So
I did wonder that if we stayed there and gotten a room there, if it would have been a heart shaped bed.
Yeah, yeah, probably would have, and that would have been a little weird.
But they too are bombarded, not realizing how big this poker thing is, and now they want to expand as well, right? They were talking expansion, so. And you know one thing we noticed too, and we haven't brought it up yet, but a lot of these rooms, the way it's done up there, they share their dealers with the pits. You know, they share their dealers with the blackjacks and the three-card pokers and whatever. So these dealers, and even like the managers and stuff, they're all rotated through, especially at Mount Airy. Like the guy we were talking to, you know, he spends like 2 or 3 days there a week, but the other 2 or 3 he spends out in the pits and stuff. And so, you know, you don't necessarily know who's going to be on that day or if you're going to have poker-dedicated people, but they did say that once these dealers, like when they're in the room, they stay in poker the whole shift. They don't go out to blackjack for an hour and then come back in and deal poker. So you know that they're going to be in a rhythm and a groove for you. But it was interesting that there weren't very many dedicated only poker dealer rooms.
Yeah, yeah. And then we ended that night at Sands Bethlehem, and you know, I thought this was really cool when we drove in because one, we didn't know where we were going.
Right.
we got lucky. You're like, you know, right or left, right or left. I'm like, let's go right, and I got right. Woohoo! but they really took a really cool theme for this casino. I think it's really kind of native to that area. I mean, it's like a big kind of warehouse kind of looking thing.
Yeah,
but cooler. I mean, it's not like drab, but you know, a lot of exposed piping. And, you know, it was just kind of a neat area, I thought. And then the poker room in this room wasn't really a room. It was part of the actual casino, which, you know, some people like, some people don't like. But if you like it, I think you're going to really like it there. And they split the room up so you got the brush when you come in. And then they got, like, a little circular waiting area with couches
and
TVs.
Chairs. Yeah, yeah.
So you're right in the middle of the room rather than, like, on one end of it. And that's an interesting thing that I've seen anywhere before.
Yeah, they had the same thing with the Bravo too, where they can text you. So that way, if it's loud and you're playing slots and you can't, you know, hear them, they're not going to really try to announce, "Hey, we got a 1-2 table for Chris." They'll just text you on your phone. That way, you could be anywhere on the property and still know, because there's no way you're going to hear the announcement because the casino is pretty loud. The music is pretty loud. But if you like that atmosphere, if you want to be energetic and stay awake, that's definitely the room for you. It's like you said, it's railed off rather than walled off, so it's really wide open, and which is nice too. You don't want to be closed in your poker room. You don't want to feel claustrophobic. So
right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Definitely was jumping in a lot of games too. Right, a lot of games were being.
Oh
spread.
Yeah, yeah. It was almost packed.
Yep, yep. Which is pretty much what it was like in every room. There was not a slow room when we were there. Even though when you got there, they all said, "Yeah, it's slow." They all say that, and I'm like, "Dude, you don't know what slow is."
We've seen some slow rooms, man, and this is not it.
We've gone on trips where there's just no one in the room at all except the staff for hours. So believe me, you're not slow. But it was good. It was a good trip, and a lot of rooms in one trip, man. I don't know how we did it. But the one thing I did say to you when it was over is we're never doing this again. You know.
But you know, when we're leaving Sands Bethlehem too, the highlight really of that trip, we were up in the elevator.
Yeah.
Got out, went to the parking garage, and we were in the middle of a conversation. The guy go, "Hey, Andy, up. That's a great podcast," or something like that, right?
Well, yeah,
we
get out of the elevator and we're heading toward our car, and you go through the door, and then I'm like grabbing the door to hold onto it, and the guy behind me says, "Hey, great podcast," and I turn around, I'm like, "Hey, man, thanks, hey man, appreciate it," you know, and then you're like, "What?" and then you figure it out because of the way the words were forming in the air as they were passing by your ears, and you're like, "Oh," I was like, "Oh, that was cool, man. The guy knew who we were." And, I mean, it must have been kind of startling for him, too, because, you know, he knows, if he listens to the show, he knows where we are, and he just happens to be passing through on that level, in that casino, in that state, at that time, and you and I are walking by him, and he's got the presence of mind to hear our voices and know it's us and be like, "Hey, it's Andy Up, guys. Hey, nice podcast." It was like, so it was awesome.
Yeah, I felt bad that, you know, he was jumping in the elevator and we were jumping in the parking garage and we didn't get a chance to talk to him. So whoever you are,
yeah, send us an email
or
something.
We weren't being rude. We were just, you know, kind of startled by the whole thing.
We want to know who you are.
Yeah, yeah. Let us know who you are.
That was really, really cool.
And then, of course, we closed the trip, headed down to Parks Casino, as it's called now, Philadelphia Park. And the room isn't open yet, but it'll be open probably, what, in the next couple months, it sounds like?
Yeah, I think their target is late October, but early November.
Yeah, very tight-lipped on what it's going to be like. But every room that we went to, everybody mentioned that the manager there, Ari Mizrahi, is a great guy. So expecting good things. We don't really have anything to report on it right yet. But hopefully in the next couple months they'll open and we'll know more about what's going on there. But that's another great option right there, pretty close to Philadelphia.
This is the portion of the show that we like to title humor. Because, okay, yeah, we gave them the report on what was going on, but you know, there's always the things that happen during the trip that make it worthy of our main topic. And, you know, again, we went on a trip like this and didn't play any poker. I mean, last time went to Louisiana, we played, but we didn't play one hand. We just didn't have time, and it just killed us.
Yeah, not one hand, and, man, probably our only opportunity, really. I mean, the first night we stayed in Baltimore, there's no poker there.
Right.
Which is kind of halfway. But the second night, we probably could have stayed at Sands, but it was like getting late. And, man, just kind of crazy that you could do this many poker rooms and not play anything. But you know, the whole trip, Chris, you know, the last trip ended with the flight from hell.
Yes.
Where, you know, we were doing a lot of Hail Marys, and I didn't know what a Hail Mary was at the time, but I learned real quick. And this trip started with the worst traveler in the history of air travel. And that's probably saying something, Chris, right?
It was.
Because we've all bumped into just freaks that just should not be allowed anywhere near an airport.
Yep.
But this woman, you know, we're getting ready to board the plane. We're in the A group. She's ahead of us. I look up, and she's jabbing to the little flight attendant, or not the little gate manager there.
Right.
And I see her grab two bags and wheel them on, and she's like, you can't miss her. She's got red hair, and she looks like she's 12. And so the gate guy started laughing. Yeah, looks like 12. All right, gotcha. And she walks and drags her bags on. A little did I thought she was just talking like her friend, like looked young or something.
Right.
Or whatever. No, we got on the plane, Chris. It was an actual 12-year-old, which I assume is her daughter. So here is the chain of events that happened here. The woman apparently chose getting on the Southwest jet so she could pick her seat over waiting for her daughter to come back from the restroom or wherever she was.
She chose comfort over her daughter's safety. It's just the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Now, you know, I don't have kids. I know you have, like, stepkids and grandkids. But the people that I know have kids, they're like, you know, it's tough to choose between my kids, which is better. This woman apparently had no trouble choosing between her kid and a seat.
Oh, man. That is either one terrible mother or one terrible kid.
That's true. We don't know which.
We don't know which it is, but judging by the way she acted, I would say it's the mother.
Yeah, I'm putting my money on the mom, too. Because then we get on the airplane, of course, this is one of these people that doesn't have time to pack before she gets on the plane, so unpacks when she gets on the plane. And she's one of these people that stands in the aisleway when you're trying to get past, and she's trying to tug something out of her bag. And eventually she notices that 4,000 people are behind her trying to get to their seats. And she gets out of the aisleway, and then she climbs on the seats like a gorilla. She's like hanging from the overhead bin, still trying to get this thing out of her bag. And you and I are looking at her like, is this really going on? And so, you know, these poor passengers behind her, even though she's out of the aisleway now, she's still kind of in the aisleway. And they're, you know, ducking and weaving. Like they're, you know, a boxer trying to avoid a rope-a-dope, you know, so that she doesn't get dorked by her as they're trying to get past her to the seats. And finally, the flight attendant came running down the aisle. Ma'am, please, let everybody pass by. That's really dangerous. I'll help you get it when you're done. And then she shoots him this glare.
I know.
This glare like, oh, my God.
Like, how dare you?
Why are you punishing me? I need to get that book right now. And, you know, I think you and I were still stunned. We're like, is this woman for real? So, you know, she gets a little opening in the passenger traffic and jumps back up on the seats like a gorilla, you know, from the Samsonite commercial.
I know, that's exactly what I was thinking of. I was like, hey, this should be our Apes mascot.
And at this point is when I realize it's a book that she's trying to get out of one of her pockets in her overstuffed bag. And she's tugging and tugging and tugging, and finally she rips the book out, frees it from its captivity, and along with it comes 4,000 other things out of the pocket, showering down like a meteor shower, dorking people left and right. You know, people are gashing the head, and she's just laughing. Well, I didn't think that was going to happen. No, of course you didn't. Everybody else on the plane knew that was going to happen, but you were oblivious to it.
Oh, my God.
And, wow. So we don't know how annoying she was during the flight, because she was like many rows ahead of us, and there's other people competing for the most annoying traveler during the flight. But we get off, right? We get off the plane, get out to the little jetway. We say goodbye to the little flight attendant. Thank you, thank you. Yeah, right? We get in the jetway, and here she is, immediately outside the door of the jet, in a... blocking the jetway. If she was the goalie on Team USA, we would have won the World Cup, because nothing was getting past this woman. And then she turns to her daughter, who is probably 4 centimeters wide and all the way to the left of the jetway, and she says, not making this up, not like we're making any of the rest of this up, come on, honey, you are blocking the jetway.
You're blocking people from getting by.
And you and I both look at each other like, did she just say that? She's not blocking anything, but it's the mom that's blocking it.
At this point, I begin to start saying, worst traveler ever, louder and louder until she can hear me. I mean, I was saying it on the plane, and she couldn't hear me, and I just kept saying it louder and louder. Finally, when we get off the plane, she's right in front of me. I'm just like, worst traveler ever, lady. You are the worst traveler ever. I could not believe this lady. I mean, how do you live with that?
Yeah.
That kid's got sainthood already, and she's only 12.
Yeah, I hoped she was flying her there and dropping her off with a husband who's divorced now, and the kid might have a better shot in the broken family than it will be with her. But, man.
That kid has many years of therapy ahead.
Crazy, crazy. But then everything was great after that. We got in the car, and I drove very safely for 10 hours. Did not drive you crazy at all.
I just want to say this, okay? This is to the Antiup Nation. If I happen to die of natural causes, and you guys are all still around, and you happen to find out somehow that I died, just know that I could have lived probably 5 or 6 more years had I not driven with Scott on these road trips. He shaved, he may not have killed me, but he shaved precious time off my overall life. Oh, man, he scares the bejesus out of me when we drive around. I got to tell you, at the funniest moment, and of course, it's ridiculous that these people do this for their highways. I don't know what they're thinking, but the funniest moment was the toll booth change machine. So we're driving, right? And I'm like, oh, we're coming up on a toll. And so Scott's like, all right, and he's fumbling with his George Costanza 5-pound wallet out of his front pocket while he's driving, you know. And then, God forbid, if his phone goes off, because then it's like, oh, my God, do I have a text? And he's checking his phone, and he's checking his wallet, and he's not driving, he's not looking at the road. And then he goes, oh, my God, and he corrects, overcorrects. Oh, my God. So we're getting up to the toll booth, and he's like, it says perfect change or
exact change,
right? And I'm like, well, we don't have exact change. And so,
and of course, you're oblivious. You don't see a problem with this, the fact that we don't have change.
I'm like, just drive through it.
Is to have exact change. That's not a problem for you.
But then about what, maybe it was like maybe 50 paces from the actual big, you know, highlight Cesta basket they have there that collects all the change as you chuck it in, there's this change machine. It's a change machine, people, on the highway. Scott sees it at the last second and slams on the brakes. Everything that's in the back seat comes flying forward, hits the back of the chairs, gives us whiplash. I'm like, what are you doing? There's a change machine right there. Like, why is there a change machine here? Why is it the change machine up by where the actual toll gate thing is? Why did they stop it here? It made no sense. It was the stupidest thing ever. How can you have that there? Oh, my God. And where was that? Was that like, were we in Delaware or were we still in Pennsylvania?
I don't know where it was at that point. But here's the thing, folks. If you're going to charge 50 cents for a toll, one, don't charge 50 cents for a toll. Make it worth my while. But two, yeah, put the change booth not only close to the thing, but I had to get out of the car.
I know. On the highway.
And to pop off the seat belt and jump over there and get my change for the pay of 50 cent toll. Absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, my God. You know, and the other thing, too, is it's like, this machine will change $1, $5, $10, and $20 increments. And I'm thinking, I'm going to put a 20 in here for 50 cents and then 18 freaking Susan B. Anthony or Sacagawea dollars. Give me a break. Oh, my God. It was just terrible. And then we got the damn, you know, Catholic school teacher slash nurse ratchet GPS lady yelling at us. Oh, man, it was brutal, that GPS lady.
She was not kind.
No, she was mean. She wasn't like, you should turn here. No, she was like, turn right now. Turn right now. And it was like she got more and more aggravated the closer we got to the actual thing we had to do. Oh, man, we got to change that voice somehow, man. That was crazy.
Yeah, we'll have to work on that. But speaking of crazy... we know how to live it up on these road trips at night. You know, we're all business during the day, but when we get to the hotel, we cut it up.
Yeah, yeah. We are human mullets. We're business on the front end of the trip, and we are all party in the back.
So we, you know, I was planning the trip, and I'm like, hey, Chris, guess what? Halfway between Harrington and Harrisburg is Baltimore. So we could actually stay there, and guess what? The Orioles are in town. They're playing the Red Sox. We could actually maybe see a game at Camden Yards, which I never have, you have. But I'm like, this is perfect. It's actually, it worked out well. And, of course, we plan the trip, and we're like, yeah, it's going to be cutting it close, depending on how long we spend in these rooms. So, of course, we get there at the bottom of the fifth inning.
Yeah.
When we check at the hotel. All right, the game's not happening. I thought we were still going to go out, and you kick your shoes off. Lay down in bed, call your wife, start doing other things. I'm like, all right, well, I guess we're not doing anything. So I lay down in bed, and of course I fall asleep because that's what I do when I'm in bed. And I wake up at like 11, and you're like, hey, I thought we were going out. And I'm like, yeah, so did I. 2 hours ago when I wasn't tired. So we never leave. We get up in the morning. Of course, you know, we're in this major metropolitan city. Didn't do anything.
Nope.
We could have stayed in the suburbs probably and not paid $30 to park in the garage. And then the last night we show up in the future metropolis of Easton, PA.
Yeah, way in the future.
Yeah, because, you know, Sands Bethlehem is working on a hotel now. It doesn't have one. So, you know, we stayed at our favorite little Holiday Inn Express. And we're driving in. I'm like, I see Lone Star Steakhouse. And I'm like, all right, I'm getting my beer on today. So we get to the hotel room, and you do the same thing. You kick your shoes off, you lay down, you turn the TV on, you're talking to the wife, and I'm like, all right, I guess we're not going. So I'm like, all right, I'll get some work done. And so then, like, you know, you're watching the Yankees game, and like at the eighth inning, you're like, hey, I thought we were going out. I'm like, I know we thought we were going out. So I'm like, all right, let's just wait for the game. I don't want to, you know, leave in the middle of the game. And then so we leave at around 10 o'clock, drive the two blocks down to the Lone Star. Door's locked.
And they got the gall to call this place a restaurant and saloon. At 10 o'clock, it's already boarded up.
Come on. So we get in the car. I'm like, oh, there's got to be a bar somewhere around here. We drive probably 4,000 miles. Every back road of Easton, PA, looking for anything that looks like a bar, nothing.
Well, here's the thing, too. You come to an intersection in this town, and there's obviously in an intersection, it's a cross. There's four ways to go. So we go three of the four ways, and then the fourth way, we go like 15 feet, and we're like, nah, there's nothing up here. We turn around, we go back home. All right, we're going to bed, and, you know, whatever. So we leave. And as we're leaving in the morning, I was like, wouldn't it be funny if now that we're driving, we see a bar in the daylight that we couldn't see last night? And sure enough, we come over the hill on the fourth direction that we didn't really go on. And on the left-hand side is this massive bar called Shorty's or something.
Yeah, something like that. But it was a bar, darn it. Would have patronized it had I known it was there. They need some more signage or something. Little side of the fork in the road, bar this way. Would have been nice, Easton, PA city planners.
Oh, my God. And you know, the funny thing is, too, is Scott, all day after that's like, oh, man, I had such a headache. And I'm like, yeah, it's because you didn't have booze in the last 2 days. And you're like, that happens, you know, that happens. I'm like, yeah, you got the DTEs, man.
But none of our troubles on this trip compared to our two bathroom incidents. And for those of you listening with small children or workmates around, don't worry, there are no human excrements in either of these stories. But we did not have the best of luck with the throne room on this trip. And I will start because the first one was your fault.
Yes.
And the second one, debatable whether it was my fault, but you'll probably say it is. But the first one, we're at this beautiful Sheraton where they charge you for everything. And you come out of the bathroom and you're like, oh, hey, man, sorry. I didn't empty my razor at home. And I went to put it back in the case and I knocked it back off and heroin everywhere. But don't worry, I cleaned it all up. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Oh, ha, ha, funny thing. And so I walk in the bathroom right before we leave, and oh my God.
That was
like
nothing.
You wrestled a bear in the bathroom.
That was nothing. You should have seen it before I cleaned it.
Oh my God. Man. Did this come off of one human? Absolutely impossible to imagine this. Like you just poured it in. Like you had a couple bags of human hair through security and just sprinkled it in there. I cannot believe it.
There was a towel on the ground, and before I cleaned it, it looked like a bearskin rug.
I was going to say, I walk in, I'm like, boy, I really thought our towels were white, but I guess maybe they were black. Oh, no, that's hair.
I totally forgot to clean the shaver. And I'm trying to put it in this little leather case, and I'm like, why isn't this going in? And it was the little back trimmer was released, and I didn't know it, so it was too wide. So when I went to push the back trimmer down, my thumb caught the edge of the cap of the overall, you know, automatic trimmer thing, and the whole lid came right off and just poof, everywhere. Hair went all over the place. It was all over the sink, all over the floor, the toilet seat. It was everywhere. And I'm like, oh, no. Although I actually used a different different term there. But, you know, and I was surprised you didn't be like, what's going on? You know, because the way I said it, it was like something happened. And then, yeah, I cleaned it up best I could. I thought I did a good job. You were all, oh, my God, what the hell's going on in here?
Yeah, I'm sure the little chambermaid probably disagrees with your assessment of cleaned it up well.
Hey, that's what she's there for, right? To clean up our mess.
Yeah, that's what she's there for.
Yeah, okay, so we'll find out what they're there for as we tell your story here, buddy. So the next time we're getting up and we're getting out of the Holiday Inn. Now, the night before, you know, Scott and I had tried to find a place for him to get his drunk on. We get home and, like, Lewis Black is on, like, the HBO channel, so we're like, we both like Lewis Black. We're watching him. But during the skit, I'm like, what is that noise? Is the toilet running? I'm thinking to myself. I said, all right, let me go fix this. So I get up, and sure enough, it's in our bathroom. I open the door, and the toilet keeps, like, having to refill the tank. So I'm like, all right, you jiggle the handle. That's what you do. I jiggle the handle. Perfect. Stops running. It fixed it. All it was, the little plunger thing was kind of on an angle. So I jiggle the handle. It's all set. Go to sleep. Wake up next morning, Scott's already showered and shaved, did whatever he had to do, and he's going to have breakfast. So I'm like, hey, are you done in the bathroom? And he's like, yeah, I'm all set. I'm like, all right, that's cool, you know. Scott sits down at the little couch because we had like one of those suites or whatever. He's working on his computer. And I walk in there and I hear squish, squish, squish. I'm like, what the? I look down and there is an inch of water on the floor and every towel but one is on the floor. Sopping wet, soaking with water. And I was like, what the hell happened in here? So I come back out and I'm like, Scott, did you know that this is all flooded in here? And like not even missing a beat, not even remotely affected by this. You're like, yeah, I had some problem with the toilet. And that's all you said. And I'm like, some problem with, yeah, you know, I tried to fix it and I broke off the guts in the back. I'm like, how did you break off the? So I'm like, oh my God. So I go in there, and you can see the lid is upside down on the sink. And I look in the toilet, and there is that big, round, bulbous thing floating perpendicular to the... It's not horizontal anymore. It's up and down bobbing in the water. I'm like, this is supposed to be attached to the guts. How did you rip this off? And he's like, it wouldn't stop. The water wouldn't stop. So I tried to fix it, and I snapped it off. And I'm like, how did you... Oh, my God. So I go, oh, my God. So you realize we're on the third floor, right? And he's like, yeah, whatever. I'm like, what do you mean, yeah, whatever? There's people below us. These tiles aren't waterproof sealed. They're probably getting dripped on right now. So I go, all right, fine, whatever. I'll just use my towel when I'm done to sop up the rest of this water, and we'll explain to them that it never really worked. You know, it never really worked when we got there. The toilet was screwed up.
Which is the truth.
Right, right. It is sort of the truth. But so I go, all right, I'm going to take a shower. Let's get the hell out of here. So I go to turn the shower on, and it does that Archie Bunker, there's air in the pipes kind of noise. I'm like, what the? And you said, oh, yeah, yeah, I turned the water off at the toilet. So the only way you can take a shower, Chris, is if you turn the water on just a little bit and then jump in the shower real quick, all the while watching the back tank of the toilet to see if it would overflow while you're in there. Because if it starts to overflow, you got to hop out and turn the water off. I'm like, are you kidding me? We're spending $99 a night for this? Oh, my God. So I hop in there. I wash my hair really fast. I get out. I sop up all the water, and I throw all the towels in the tub. I come out, and I'm like, let's go, man. I'm going to have breakfast. Let's get the hell out of here. So before I could say it to Scott as we're checking out, I was going to say, hey, Scott, tell him that the toilet was running all night, and we don't know what was wrong with it, but we didn't need to use the bathroom until this morning, and we noticed that it overflowed during the night. This is what I wanted him to say. But I forgot to tell him that. I don't know what I was thinking. I was probably entranced by the big bowl of fruit that was by the counter. I don't know. And Scott walks up to him, and he's like, yeah, we're checking out. Here's our card. Oh, by the way, he says, there's something wrong with the toilet, and I probably made it worse. See you later. And then he walks out. I'm like, oh, my God, we're going to get a bill in the mail for, like, flood damage and the guts on the toilet and everything. Oh, man, that was hilarious. I don't know what you did to that toilet or how you managed to sever that bar from the plastic guts, but this goes down and ante up more as, like, the most hilarious mishap ever on our road trips.
I was just trying to help.
You know, this harkens back to when the business first started, and I had to go to your house and help you put your desk together because you had, like, wheels coming out of the side of the desk, and you're like, I don't know, it was just left over. I'm like, oh, my God, dude, you need some serious help with these things, man. Oh, God.
Well, you know, fortunately, we got a couple weeks off before the next road trip when we head up to Pittsburgh in West Virginia, and we can only imagine the hijinks that will ensue there. Fortunately, we were only there one night, so hopefully it won't not be too many opportunities to have this this much quote-unquote fun.
Okay, let's try to get through the hand of the week.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
All right, hand of the week this week comes from Ryan Gibbs. He's a previous swag winner, so but hey, you know, we use the hands that we get, right?
Yeah.
And I like this one because it's a bar league. You know, a lot of our listeners, Chris, play in bar leagues, and the play there is obviously a little bit different than a casino environment or online when there's actual money on the line, even though there's some sometimes some pretty big prizes in these bar leagues. So
right.
It's not that you're not playing for nothing. And that's exactly the situation that Ryan found himself in. It's a squiggly 160-player tournament.
Squiggly.
And the top two win a $1,000 World Series of Poker event entry seat plus some cash.
Wow.
And players 3 to 5 also get cash on a graduated scale. So as far as bar league goes, there's some nice stuff in the kitty here.
Yeah, it's a nice little turnout for a monthly. Or a quarter.
And and the players start with varying chip stacks here, depending on how many local tournaments they won. So it's another kind of thing the bar leagues do that you generally don't see in the casino environment. Right. They could try and encourage you to go to the tournaments. And so they give you a few extra chips. So different chip stacks. So here's the thing. He says it's a tight, aggressive table for the most part. And he had just won an all-in with pocket fours a few hands prior. His opponent paired a 10 on the flop, and our hero hit a one out on the river, the trip force, which is nice because he says some other guy folded him. Tight, aggressive the whole game. And it's early in the tournament. It's the third round. Blinds are 100, 200, and we are at a full table.
Okay.
All right. Our hero is in early position, under the gun plus two, with squiggly 3,700 in chips. And the under-the-gun player limps, under-the-gun plus one, folds, and we look down at ace of hearts, king of hearts.
Okay.
Feel free to offer some advice. Lee's not on the line today, buddy. So yeah.
I just didn't know if you were going to tell me like what he did, and then I'd say what I would do. But if you want me to say what I would do, I would definitely
raise. I know this is your first hand of the week, so let me explain how this works. We give you the setup. We get to the cards, and then you decide what you would do, and then I tell you what happened.
I'm going to – let's see. It's 1-200, and we got a limper already. Yeah, I'll make it 800.
800.
Yeah, pretty standard.
Yep. A little 3X plus one for the extra guy, right? and that is exactly what our hero does. So far, we're off onto a good start here. Raised to 800, and it folds around to the small blind, who calls, quote-unquote, somewhat quickly.
Okay.
And this player had 12,000 in chips to start with. The big blind, the initial limper, both fold. And so we're looking at a pot of 2,000.
Okay.
Flop comes 6 of clubs, 10 of hearts, 3 of spades.
Okay.
And the small blind checks.
He says
his read on this guy was he's somewhat tight, but not that good. And I noticed him trying to get tricky with check raises recently with marginal hands. Our hero here is putting them on a hand like ace jack, ace queen, king queen, maybe a ten of hand, but he typically was betting hands when he hit.
Okay, well that kind of is counter. He said that he likes to get tricky and check raise, but then he says he bets hands that he hit, so he would only check raise with hands that he hit. So right, yeah. So I'm not really sure what to think here.
Maybe check raises with hands he didn't hit and trying to get.
Okay. All right, well, then it just seems odd to me to raise and then not bet this flop. You know, it's a pretty, rainbow, right? You said it was club, heart, and spade.
Club, heart, spade, yes.
Yeah, so that's rainbow. There's really no straight draws here. Our ace king is probably good. We'll find out if we bet, I think. So there's no draw. If somebody calls here out of position, they have to have hit it. So I'm going to bet probably, let's see, there's 2,000 in the pot. Maybe 11 or 1200, and see what happens. Because again, if he missed it, he'll fold to a $1,200 bet. If he hits and calls or check raises, I can get away for it, and I still have, about 2600 or so left, 2700 or so. So, I'm gonna bet about 1200 here. I have to bet here. I can't just check. It seems kind of weird.
Yeah, we got to do the continuation bet here. If we did the raise pre-flop and. Like you said, and if we get called, hopefully just get called and we'll get another shot at another card that maybe helps us. And if we get raised, then, yeah, we are waiting for the next hand, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Our hero says he's not in love with his hand but thinks a half to three-fourths pot size bet might get re-raised or called as our opponent has covered. So he decides to check behind to see if he could hit an ace or a king on the flop or maybe a heart to chase a flush cheaply.
Again, if he thinks he's going to get re-raised, I mean, it's kind of a weird thought to me to say that, you know, if I bet I might get re-raised, you can't play like that. It seems kind of odd to say that. So I still think I'm betting here. I don't like the check because he could just steal it now with a bet out. If he bets out, I know I'm behind. So I want to see where I am. I know Lee hates to say that, but I think continuation better. You showed strength pre-flop. You could easily have jacks, kings, aces here, and the guy could think that you have a big hand and let it go. And if he missed it, he's going to let it go anyway. So I don't agree with the check, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I guess the tough thing is if an opponent has been a perpetual check raiser here, You don't want that to happen in a pot that you've missed on so far, even though we still have two overs. So I guess that would be the only thing that played my mind about betting. But, you know, and that and her chip stack is pretty low. I mean, we're talking about putting in a bet of about a third of our stack here, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know whether necessarily we're getting getting close to getting committed. Probably not, with the blinds as low as they are now.
Well, I mean, I figure if I bet that much, I still have more than 10 big blinds, so I'm still in a situation where my M is probably not so close to being shove mode, but very close. And if I can get away from it, but I really think a continuation bet needs to be there. So I would bet 12. And some people would shove there, I think, just because of the. It's almost 50% of your stack at that point. So I don't know. I don't like the check, though. I just don't like the check.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, because if you're putting a third year stack and you're hoping to get them to fold here, you don't want to call here. You might, you know, if you're going to put that bet in, maybe you do really put them to a test.
Yeah.
But I guess the problem with that, too, is he's got a lot of chips. He's
you can afford
12,000, so he can afford to call it off with something. And, boy, actually, in the end, kind of a tough decision, I think.
So. Yeah, I do think you need to beat to bet here, though. I just can't see checking here. I would have shoved or bet something enough where I can get away from it.
I guess the other thing, too, is it's not a draw-heavy board, really, unless our opponent has something like 4 or 5 or something.
Right.
All right, so maybe you could put in a smaller bet than what we're talking. Maybe 600 or something that's not going to hurt your stack as much.
Yeah.
Doesn't have anything. He's still going to fold, right?
Yeah,
and if you get raised, then the raise isn't going to be as much, so you can consider maybe continuing on.
All right,
so I guess maybe that's what I would have decided.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's also fishy too. If the guy's got 12,000, he may just check raise on principle there too. So it's there are a lot of situations in this one hand, and a lot of them I don't like. So it's tough. But what's the turn?
All right, the turn is the six of hearts. So our board now is six of clubs, ten of hearts, three of spades, six of hearts. So we pick up our second heart, but the board does pair.
Yeah.
And the small blind bets 400 into this pot that's 2,000.
Wow. Well, I mean, I can easily call 400 here. I'm not going to do anything stupid after that. The reason being is you and I were just talking about betting 600 to 1,200 to see where we were. Now we've actually picked up a draw, whether it's not the nuts or not. I don't think this guy has 6-10 or pocket 10, so... he could have a hand. He could have a 10, and his hand just improved with that 6. So, and if he has a 6, we're still probably alive. I would just call the 400. I have no problem calling 400. So I still have 3,000 or 2,500 left or so. So,
yeah. What's interesting about this bet is it's a smallish bet. So, I mean, it very well could be a 6 trying to get some money out of us. If that's the case, I mean, we still have the hard draw depending on what his other card is.
Right.
And 400, I mean, I'm willing to call for the flush draw at that point. And if he does have a 10, then I've got a lot more outs.
Yeah, it's 6-1 on your money.
Yeah.
So I'm calling. I'm not raising or anything. I'm calling.
It's kind of the advantage of checking on the flop. It kind of worked out, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah.
Because now we're going to get to we're going to see the river much more cheaply than we would have had we bet.
Yeah, I mean, it works out to $200 a street, 200 units a street, really, instead of the 1,200 I wanted to bet or 600 you wanted to bet. So clearly a call is here. A raise is not going to help, especially considering what if this guy's willing to bet into this pot. He's not going to fold considering how much he had to start with. So I'll just call.
All right, so our hero says at this point he figures a small bet like this was the opponent trying to bet him off a hand cheaply. He reads it as weak. He says his player's not good enough to make a small disguise bet here. Or if he has a 10, he has a pretty weak kicker. So he thinks about it briefly and shoves.
Ouch. I don't like that at all. Oh, man. I don't like that at all. And I don't really agree with $400 bet being a bet to get him off the hand cheaply. I don't believe that at all. I think this guy has a hand and he's just betting and it's you know, he's not too confident in the hand, but oh my god, this guy's going to be getting a ton of odds on his money to call you, and he's got 12,000, so I don't like that at all. With all you have really is your two overs and your flush draw with one card to come, I don't like shoving at all. Why not just call, and then if you miss, you can get away from it and still have 20, whatever it was, 2,500 or whatever left. Yeah, no, I don't like that call. I mean, I don't like that shove at all.
I mean, you're betting, I don't know what the shove was, something like probably 2,900 or something maybe. and there was only, what, 2,400 in the pot. So, I mean, if you win this pot, obviously, I mean, you're almost doubling up, but it seems very risky to me.
Yeah, no. Why do that when you could just call 400 and still have 2,500 chips left for the river? And then if you hit your ace or your king, you make a decision, hit your flush, and then you get some value out of it. But, wow, no, I could never shove there.
All right, well, we do shove, and our opponent, as you said, Chris, probably could easily call this bet with something, and he did reluctantly call, turns over the 10 of clubs, 8 of spades for what's top pair, or actually top two at this point, and the river brought a blank, and our hero was done.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a great hand, especially in the blind being out of position, but he had a ton of chips. It sounded like he was a chip leader at the table, and it sounds like he'd like to gamble. He's one of those players, it seems to me, that, you know, you never know what his stack size is going to be because of the way he plays. So I didn't know if it was going to be 10-8. I thought it might be jack-10. But that's the reason why you don't shove. The river would have been a blank, and you could still have 2,500 chips and still trying to win that seat, so... next time, just consider everything before you shove.
Well, and I think this kind of illustrates what you're up against in bar league tournaments for the most part. I mean, our opponent here is what I normally see in the bar leagues in the events that I've played. You know, not being too negative on these players, but it's a different class of player.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we saw somebody limp, and then we have our 4X raise, and then he's in the blind, one of the worst positions, and calls... another 600 with 10 of clubs, 8 of spades. I there's just no upside to that call, no. In my opinion.
No. Not to say that we don't see this in brick and mortar, too.
No, it's true.
I have seen players play worse and do worse than that, but generally, you know, they're facing a raise from a guy who's in middle position and they have to call off that much to play it. They're not going to play 10-8 off. So, yeah, that's a pretty bad call.
But after that, then the check on the flop, I could agree with.
Yeah.
Some I might want to bet out, but I got to figure I have the best hand at that point. Unless I'm up against a pair, and then when he checks, then I know I have the best hand, right?
Yeah, you think.
And so the board pairs. You can't have a six. I guess I probably would have put out a bigger bet on the turn, but got some money out of him. Kind of weird how it happened. Yeah. And then when the shove comes, though, that's kind of weird, though.
Yeah. The shove makes no sense. I mean, it just does not add up. It's a semi-bluff because he thinks that his flush is going to be good, but it really makes no sense as your other player. You know, why are you shoving now? I mean, that six only improved the other guy's hand. If he has a six, you're behind. You know, I mean, you have to have pocket tens, and if you do, you want to milk him for bets. So the shove just makes no sense to the other guy, which is why you probably thought it out and then called.
Well, Ryan, we appreciate you sending in yet another hand, and as we mentioned, no swag for you, but other folks, if you email a hand of the week or a mailbag to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, you can win wonderful swag like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at pmspokerware.com.
I'd like to thank the driving gods for getting me home safely. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we will see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Let's toilet overflow beard hair.
Yeah, I know, that's awesome. I thought that's what you were going into after that. That's why I wasn't sure how you were doing.
Oh, no, that's our closer, man.
Okay, let's take the...
All right, stick it out. All right, cool.
I thought you were going to talk about it at the beginning. That's why I was like,
okay. Oh, that's funny stuff.